Chapter 22. That had been 3 weeks ago. Fleeing angrily from Theramin now, Sephara rushed to the far side of the room and caught sight of Aethor, standing by himself, looking through a set of computer printouts. He was sadly turning the pages over and over and over, as though he hoped to find a reprieve for the world buried somewhere in the dense columns. Then he looked up and saw her. Color came to her face. "Dr. Aethor, I feel I ought to ask your pardon for inviting that man to be here this evening. After all he said about us, about you, about..." She shook her head. "I genuinely thought it would be instructive for him to be among us when... Well, I was wrong. He's even more shallow and foolish than I imagined. I should never have told him to come." Wanly, Aethor said, "It scarcely is of any importance now, is it? So long as he keeps out of my way, I hardly care whether he's here or not. A few more hours, and then nothing will make any difference." He pointed through the window, toward the sky. "So dark. So very dark. And yet not nearly as dark as it will be. I wonder where Pharaoh and Yimo are. You haven't seen them, have you? No? When you came in, Dr. Sephara, you said there'd been a last-minute problem at your office. Not a serious one, I hope." "The Thombo tablets have disappeared," she said.
"Disappeared?"
"They were in the artifact safe, of course. Just before I left to come over here, Dr. Mudrin came to see me. He was on his way to the sanctuary, but he wanted to check one last thing in his translation, one new notion he'd had. So we opened the safe, and nothing. Gone, all six of them. We have copies, naturally, but still, the originals, the authentic ancient objects."
"How can this have happened?" Aethor asked.
Bitterly, Sephara said, "Isn't it obvious? The apostles have stolen them, probably to use as some kind of holy talismans after the darkness has come and done its work."
"Are there any clues?"
"I'm no detective, Dr. Aethor. There's no evidence that would mean anything to me. But it had to be the apostles. They've wanted them ever since they knew I had them. Oh, I wish I'd never said a word to them about them. I wish I'd never mentioned those tablets to anyone." Aethor took her by the hands.
"You mustn't get so upset, my girl."
"My girl." She glared at him, astonished. No one had called her that in 25 years. But she choked back her anger. He was old, after all, and only trying to be kind. He said, "Let them have them, Sephara. It makes no difference now. Thanks to that man over there, nothing makes any difference, does it?" She shrugged. "I still hate the thought that some thief in an apostle's robe was sniffing around in my office, jimmying my safe, taking things that I had uncovered with my own hands. It's like a violation of my body, almost. Can you understand that, Dr. Aethor? To have been robbed of those tablets? It's almost like a rape."
"I know how upset you are," Aethor said, in a tone that indicated he didn't really understand at all.
"Look, look there. How bright Dovahm is this evening. And in just a little while, how dark everything will be." She managed a vague smile and turned away from him. All about her, people were buzzing to and fro, checking this, discussing that, running to the window, pointing, murmuring. Now and then, someone would come rushing in with some new data from the telescope dome. She felt like a complete outsider among these astronomers. And altogether bleak, altogether hopeless. Some of Aethor's fatalism must have rubbed off on me, she thought. He seemed so depressed, so lost. It wasn't at all like him to be that way. She wanted to remind him that it wasn't the world that would end this evening. It was just the present cycle of civilization. They would rebuild. Those who had gone into hiding would come forth and start everything over, as had happened a dozen times before, or 20, or 100, since the beginning of civilization on Kalgash. But for her to tell Aethor that would probably do no more good than for him to have told her not to worry about the loss of the tablets. He had hoped all the world would prepare itself against the catastrophe. And instead, only a small fraction had paid any heed to the warning. Just those few who had gone to the university sanctuary, and whatever other sanctuaries might have been set up elsewhere. Bine came over to her. "What's this I hear from Aethor? The tablets are gone?"
"Gone, yes. Stolen. I knew I never should have allowed myself to have any sort of contact with the apostles."
Bine said, "You think they stole them?
I'm sure of it, she said bitterly. They sent word to me, after the existence of the Thombo tablets first became a matter of public knowledge, that they had information that would be of use to me. Didn't I tell you? I guess not. What they wanted was a deal similar to the one Athor worked out with that high priest, or whatever he is, Fulaman 66. We have maintained a knowledge of the old language, Fulaman said, the language spoken in the previous year of godliness. And so they had, apparently. Texts of some sort, dictionaries, alphabets of the old script, perhaps a lot more. Which Athor was able to obtain from them? Some of it. Enough, at any rate, to determine that the apostles did have genuine astronomical records of the previous eclipse. Enough, Athor said, to prove that the world had been through such a cataclysm at least once before. Athor, she went on to tell Binet, had given her copies of the few astronomical text fragments he had received from Fulaman, and she had shown them to Mudrin, who indeed had found them valuable in his own translation of the tablets. But Sephira had balked at sharing her tablets with the apostles, at least not on their terms. The apostles claimed to be in possession of a key to the early clay tablet script, and perhaps they were. Fulaman had insisted, though, that she give him the actual tablets to be copied and translated, rather than his giving her the decoding material that he had. He wouldn't settle for copies of the tablet texts. It had to be the original artifacts, or else no deal. But you drew the line at that, Binet said. Absolutely. The tablets mustn't leave the university. Give us the textual key, I said to Fulaman, and we'll provide you with copies of the tablet texts. Then we can each attempt a translation. But Fulaman had refused. Copies of the texts were of no use to him, since they could all too easily be dismissed as forgeries. As for giving her his own documents, no, absolutely not. What he had, he said, was sacred material, which could only be made available to apostles. Give him the tablets, and he would provide translations of them for her. But no outsider was going to get a look at the texts already in his possession. I was actually tempted to join the apostles for a moment, Sephira said, just for the sake of getting access to the key. You? An apostle? Only to get their textual material. But the idea repelled me. I turned Fulaman down. And Mudrin had had to toil on at his translations without the help of whatever material the apostles might have. It became apparent that the tablets did indeed seem to talk about some fiery doom that the gods had sent upon the world, but Mudrin's translations were sketchy, hesitant, sparse. Well, now the apostles had the tablets anyway, more likely than not. That was hard to take. In the chaos ahead, they'd be waving those tablets around, her tablets, as still more evidence of their own wisdom and holiness. I'm sorry that your tablets are gone, Sephira, Binet said. But maybe there's still a chance the apostles didn't steal them, that they'll turn up somewhere. I'm not counting on that, said Sephira. And she smiled ruefully and turned away to stare at the darkening sky. The best she could do by way of comfort was take Athor's line, that the world was ending in a little while anyway, and nothing mattered very much. But that was cold comfort indeed. She fought inwardly against any such counsel of despair. The important thing was to keep on thinking of the day after tomorrow, of survival, of rebuilding, of the struggle and its fulfillment. It was no good to fall into despondency like Athor, to accept the downfall of humanity, to shrug and give up all hope. A high tenor voice cut suddenly across her gloomy meditations. Hello, everybody! Hello, hello, hello! Shirin, Binet cried. What are you doing here? The plump cheeks of the newcomer expanded in a pleased smile. What's this morgue-like atmosphere in here? No one's losing their nerve, I hope. Athor started in consternation and said peevishly, Yes, what are you doing here, Shirin? I thought you were going to stay behind in the sanctuary. Shirin laughed and dropped his tubby figure into a chair. Sanctuary be damned. The place bored me. I wanted to be here where things are getting hot. Don't you suppose I have my share of curiosity? I rode in the tunnel of mystery, after all. I can survive another dose of darkness. And I want to see these stars that the apostles have been spouting about. He rubbed his hands and added in a soberer tone, It's freezing outside. The wind's enough to hang icicles on your nose. Dubham doesn't seem to give any heat at all at the distance it is this evening. The white-haired director ground his teeth in sudden exasperation. Why do you go out of your way to do a crazy thing like this, Shirin? What kind of good can you be around here? What kind of good am I around there? Shirin spread his palms in comical resignation.
A psychologist isn't worth a damn in the sanctuary. Not now. Not a thing I could do for them. They're all snug and safe, laced in underground, nothing to worry about.
And if a mob should break in during the darkness?
Sheeran laughed. I very much doubt that anyone who didn't know where the entrance was would be able to find the sanctuary in broad daylight, let alone once the suns have gone out. But if they do, well, they'd need men of action to defend them. Me? I'm 100 pounds too heavy for that. So why should I huddle in down there with them? I'd rather be here.
Sephira felt her own spirits rise as she heard Sheeran's words. She, too, had chosen to spend the evening of darkness at the observatory rather than in the sanctuary. Perhaps it was mere wild bravado. Perhaps it was idiotic overconfidence. But she was sure that she could last out the hours of the eclipse, and even the coming of the stars, if there was anything to that part of the myth, and retain her sanity. And so she had decided not to pass up the experience. Now it appeared that Sheeran, no model of bravery, had taken the same approach, which might mean that he had decided the impact of darkness would not be so overwhelming after all, despite the grim predictions he had been making for months. She had heard his tales of the tunnel of mystery and the havoc it had wreaked, even on Sheeran himself. Yet here he was. He must have come to believe that people, some at least, would turn out ultimately to be more resilient than he had expected earlier. Or else he was simply being reckless. Perhaps he preferred to lose his mind in one quick burst this evening, Sephira thought, rather than stay sane and have to cope with the innumerable and perhaps insuperable problems of the hard times ahead. No, no. She was falling into morbid pessimism again. She brushed the thought away.
Sheeran!
It was Theremin coming across the room to greet the psychologist. You remember me? Theremin 762?
Of course I do, Theremin, Sheeran said.
He offered his hand.
Gods, fellow, you've been rough on us lately, haven't you?
But bygones may as well be bygones this evening.
I wish he was a bygone, Sephira muttered under her breath.
She scowled in distaste and stepped back a few paces. Theremin shook Sheeran's hand.
What's this sanctuary you're supposed to have been in? I've heard a little about it here this evening, but I don't have any real idea of what it is.
Well, said Sheeran, we have managed to convince a few people, at least, of the validity of our prophecy of, doom, to be spectacular about it. And those few have taken proper measures. They consist mainly of the immediate members of the families of the observatory staff, certain of the faculty of Cerro University, and a few outsiders. My companion, Liliath 221, is there at this very moment, as a matter of fact. And I suppose I should be, too, but for my infernal curiosity. There are about 300 people, all told.
I see. They're supposed to hide where the darkness and the, stars can't get at them, and then hold out when the rest of the world goes poof.
Exactly. The apostles have some sort of hideout of their own also, you know. We aren't sure how many people are in it. Just a few, if we're lucky. But more likely, they've got thousands stashed away, who will come forth and inherit the world after the darkness.
So the university group, Theremin said, is intended as a counterforce to that?
Sheeran nodded. If possible. It won't be easy. With almost all of mankind insane, with the great cities going up in flames, with perhaps a big horde of apostles imposing their kind of order on what's left of the world. No, it'll be tough for them to survive. But at least they have food, water, shelter, weapons.
They've got more, said Athor. They've got all our records, except for what we will collect today. Those records will mean everything to the next cycle, and that's what must survive. The rest can go hang.
Theremin whistled a long, low whistle.
You people are completely certain, then, that everything you've predicted is going to come about just as you say.
What other position could we possibly take? Sephira asked harshly. Once we saw that disaster would inevitably come...
Yes, the newspaper man said. You had to make preparations for it. Because you were in possession of the truth. Just as the apostles of flame are in possession of the truth. I wish I could be half so certain about anything as all you truth possessors are about this evening.
She glowered at him. I wish you could be out there this evening, wandering through the burning streets. But no. No, you'll be safe in here. It's more than you deserve.
Easy, Sheeran said.
He took Theremin by the arm. Quietly, he said,
No sense provoking people now, friend. Let's go somewhere where we won't bother people, and we can talk.
Good idea, Theremin said. but he made no motion toward leaving the room. A game of stochastic chess had begun around the table, and Theremin stood watching for a moment or two in obvious incomprehension, as moves were made rapidly and in silence. He seemed amazed by the ability of the players to concentrate on a game, when they all must believe that the end of the world was just hours away.
"Come," Sheeran said again.
"Yes. Yes," said Theremin. He and Sheeran went out into the hall, followed an instant later by Binet. What an infuriating man, Sephara thought. She stared at the bright orb of Dubham, burning fiercely in the sky. Had the sky grown even darker in the past few minutes? No. No, she told herself. That was impossible. Dubham was still there. It was just imagination. The sky looked strange now that Dubham was the only sun aloft. She had never seen it like that before, such a deep purple hue. But it was far from dark out there. Somber, yes, but there was light enough, and everything was still easily visible outside despite the relative dimness of the one small sun. She thought about her lost tablets again. Then she banished them from her mind. The chess players had the right idea, she told herself. Sit down and relax, if you can.